very large numbers of people that question the war in Afghanistan, question the war in Iraq, and question the intervention in Libya, saying that really, really what those wars are about are demonstrating military power, but also the vast mineral reserves and wealth that's there in Afghanistan to be exploited, the oil reserves that are there in Iraq to be exploited, and the oil reserves that are there in Libya to be exploited. We're in a global race for resources. And a global race means there's winners and losers. If you win, you control, but you have as a price at control, and that price is armed occupation. Surely we need a much more rational approach to the world. We need to defend and protect our environment for all of us. We need to end the wars and start redistributing wealth rather than grabbing from each other.
Since the onset of the crisis in 2008, I think the cost of the war has become an additional issue which angers people. I think they think, if you're going to reduce my wages and cut my welfare services, what the hell do you think you're doing fighting wars, which in any case I thought were wrong? And I think that's a very, very widely held view. The Trade Union Congress, representing 7 million workers, passed a resolution this year saying that the Afghan war should end, that the Iraq war was wrong, that the Libya intervention was wrong. And that, in addition to the opinion poll evidence, shows that many working people just don't accept the argument for the war and just don't accept the cost of it.
We're being told we're all in this together. Well, we're not all in this together. We're all being told to tighten our belts and be careful about our spending, and yet the government wants us to be supporting businesses. Well, we would support businesses if we didn't have to support the war. The government's always got money for war. It's always got money for warmongering. Why do we interfere in places like Libya? I think the money being spent on war should be put back into our economy. There's plenty of money. There's no need for any of these cuts. Believe you me, I am absolutely certain if the people who should be paying their taxes were paying their taxes, instead of, you know, big businesses, which is what I'm talking about, going off and putting their money in offshore accounts where they're not paying into the UK economy, if we weren't supporting the arms trade, and make no bones about it, I would imagine there's absolutely loads of ministers and people in the cabinet and the government who are paying, who are getting money back, rather, from profits from the arms trade and from war. Why do they give money for warmongering? Why do they support this? While they're also cutting the defence budget, I have to say, because they will profit from it, because it suits them. It suits Britain to be in a strategic military position around the world where there's oil, where there's mineral wealth, where there's things that we want.
Scandals of the situation, which is that at the same time as British, many people in Britain and elsewhere are suffering very, very badly from the economic crisis, their lives are getting worse, a time when we're being told that we have to accept cuts to our welfare provision, to the NHS, to social services, to childcare, to all these things, we're also being told that it is essential that we spend billions of pounds on foreign wars, which, by the way, don't have majority support. I mean, the majority of people in Britain want the troops home as fast as possible from Afghanistan. The majority of people oppose the bombing of Libya from the start in Britain. So, you know, it's completely undemocratic. It's being done against the wishes of the majority of the people, but we're told it has to happen. Now, these two things, that it doesn't really add up. I don't believe that these wars do anything but actually generate misery in Libya and Afghanistan. And so they should stop spending the money on wars, and they should spend it on the things that people really need in a very desperate situation.
Well, yeah, I lived in London for most of my life. I moved to Hastings about 18 months ago, just after I'd had him, just because it's a lot cheaper outside London than it is to live in London. So obviously I had to make, because of the space, and I knew if I lived outside London, I can get a bigger space for him and I can, for the amount of money I had at the time. So I had to make that tough decision to move out of London, really. Obviously for me, I know my situation is because I have to find a job that evolves around my son, which is difficult. But if I was on my own, I would be working right now. Either starting at 6 a.m, which I could not do, or they were starting where I'll be finishing at 12, 1 o'clock at night, which I could not do. It's not easy, to be honest, to find a job right now as a single mother.
There are two things that the government really needs to be looking at. That's the situation of families out of work and the situation of families in work. Currently, just over half of children living below the poverty line are in a household where there is at least one parent in work. So low wages as well as worklessness is really quite a serious factor underlying our high levels of child poverty. We need a strategy that looks at the growth needed to create the jobs with the decent wages that parents want and that parents need. But we also need to be looking at the deficiencies in the welfare system that are actually going to be worsened by the action of this government with its programme of cuts that has been shown to hit the poorest much harder than the wealthiest. They did say in their austerity programme, everybody is in this together. But in practice, that's not what we're seeing. So they do need to look again at these cuts.
The report that the IFS is actually shocking. It shows that far from the government meeting its promise to tackle child poverty, end child poverty by the year 2020, we're actually going to see a rise in child poverty, a massive rise in child poverty, more than 800,000 more children being in poverty in 2020 compared to this year. And that's simply unacceptable. It means that we're going to see, unless the government takes a drastic change of course, a whole generation of children's life chances lost to the consequences of poverty.
The current government is having to reduce the welfare bill as part of its deficit reduction package. Now, of course, it could have chosen to implement different measures involving less of an impact on the incomes of low-income households and more taxes on the median household, that's the person who's in the middle of the income distribution and against whose income the relative poverty line is set. And that would lead to a reduction in relative poverty. But it is even more difficult to see in such austere times that it would be politically achievable to get the level of increase in redistribution that would be required.
If we haven't got the money to run our health service properly or to build the houses that our people need, and why are we developing a new generation of nuclear missiles, the replacement of Trident, which is going to cost £76 billion? Why are we spending billions of pounds on keeping troops in Afghanistan, keeping troops on alert, and RAF, the Royal Air Force, on alert over Libya?
Liam Fox's argument that the Libyan invasion or the Libyan operation was so expensive because it was high tech and not liable to kill civilians. I mean, you know, this is a joke on so many different levels, really, because first of all, we were told very early on that the Libyan operation would cost a few hundred million at most. That turns out to be not true. It's going to cost 1.7 billion or something of that order. Secondly, we're told, anyway, this is supposed to be an operation to save civilians. It's a humanitarian operation. And yet, even by Liam Fox's own admission, we clearly are going to be killing and have killed a whole number of civilians in Libya. For us to be spending this amount of money at a time when, as I say, We are also being told that it is essential that we have cutbacks in the public services, cutbacks in the NHS, cutbacks in the education system and so on. It's an outrage, really. No one wants these wars. The justification for the wars don't add up anymore, which is why the opinion polls are so strongly against them. It's fundamentally a war about control of the region, about resource grabs, about Western powers and Britain, in most importantly, trying to build their influence or maintain their influence in the Middle East. Why should British people be paying for this kind of corporate war at a time when we're also being told we have to make cutbacks in things that are really essential for us? It's a disgrace. The priorities of the government are all wrong, and we're going to carry on campaigning until they change.
The new government has come in. It has brought in this enormous austerity package, and the first thing it did was to take £40 billion per year away from the welfare budget. That affects families, that affects children, that affects the unemployed. And under the welfare reform bill that they're now trying to push through Parliament, from 2013 there will be a global limit on what a family can get in benefits of £500 per week. Now that sounds a lot of money. Sounds fantastic. But when the rent of a private house or flat in this area is £350 per week, that only leaves £150 per week for everything else for a family with children. And that means that the levels of poverty are going to get worse, or poor working class families are going to be driven out of areas like this to live somewhere else. It's not a good situation at all, and I'm very, very angry about it. And I contrast this. I was angry with the Labour government for the war in Iraq and Afghanistan and the money that was spent on that. And I'm equally angry with this government for now proposing the replacement of the nuclear missile system by spending £76 billion on new nuclear missiles. This is ridiculous.
Evident from a child's point of view, but looking back and in hindsight, I can only imagine the struggle and the plight of someone like my mother, a single parent trying to raise four young people in the economic climate that we've seen in the last 10 years. It must have been an extreme struggle, but it's something that, you know, I look back with fond memories nonetheless, which is a testament of how well she's done.
There is a big gap between rich people and poor people in my area, and I think in all London and UK. And it's very hard to get job because the background, because the learning, the language sometimes, the hijab sometimes. So many challenges. So to improve your level of life, you need to work hard, double than any other person. So poor, they kept poor, maybe, especially if they already are coming from different background and languages. And we don't have that chances like any other, like people learning or English their first languages.
I can imagine that the life must have been very hard for parents like my mother to raise young people or young children in times where the food prices are the highest in Europe. And travel is through the roof. Life must have been very hard. And obviously as a child, that is kept away from you and you don't really understand. But, I think that one thing that I can easily say, money wasn't a luxury for us and for me. And not to say that I feel in any way hindered by that, but I feel that was something that, you know, is definitely an issue and did prevent me from doing things that other young people were able to do.
In Britain, we measure both absolute poverty and relative poverty. The idea of absolute poverty is an income line that is held constant, so that over time, if the national wealth is increasing, you should see the numbers of children in absolute poverty falling substantially. Relative poverty looks at the difference between the richest and the poorest. And that's really quite important, because if you don't make progress on relative poverty, you end up with a situation of social segregation where the richest and the poorest are living quite separate, different lives from each other. And that can lead to all kinds of social problems in society.
It's really important that in terms of government policy, the government looks at its ambition to make work a route out of poverty. It's actually carrying out some radical reform of the welfare system in Britain. It wants to be able to guarantee that if people take jobs, they will be definitely better off than being on benefits, and that's a good thing. But unfortunately, the investment that's being put into the welfare system is not enough to guarantee that parents who are in work will be able to earn enough to raise a family. It's vital that the government supports more help for parents on their childcare costs, more help for parents who want to go back to work, more help for parents who want to work part-time, so that children are being able to be given the things they need by their parents who are in work.
I do think the government can do more to help single mothers, especially those who do want to go back to work and those who do want to better themselves. I think they should put more focus on that. Been looking for a job for the last 6 months at least, and I mean, as I said, I have got job offers, but the hours are not child friendly, and you know, so I can't accept those jobs. So that's why it has taken me a lot longer to find a job.
At the moment, we're in a situation where the big banks, which are essentially responsible for the economic mess that we're all in right now, are being bailed out by the government with taxpayers' money to the tune of hundreds of millions of pounds, not just in Britain but right across the world. And yet we have a situation where you know, these kids, these young people are suffering serious levels of poverty on a scale that hasn't really been the case for many, many years in Britain. And they're just allowed to, it's allowed to carry on. The scandal continues. And really what the government should be doing is changing its priorities drastically. The austerity policies that they're pursuing are making the economic crisis worse anyway, are leading potentially to a double dip recession. What should be happening is the government should be responding to this crisis by actually giving money and resources to those who are suffering most from it, and that includes young people, it includes kids. So there needs to be a real shift in the priorities of the way the government is going.
We've been in an unwinnable war in Afghanistan, and we've spent £18 billion on it. We have a Trident missile system which costs £75 billion, which is a leftover from the Cold War, the Trident missile system, that's where it originated. So the weapon is aimed at absolutely nobody. Nobody seriously thinks there's going to be a nuclear exchange between superpowers now. Everybody knows that the Russian state is not going to launch a preemptive nuclear missile attack on London. So you have an entirely redundant nuclear weapons system costing billions of pounds, which is simply a virility symbol for the British government. So these are viewed, these weapon systems and the conflicts are viewed in two totally polarised and opposed ways by the mass of the population in this country and by the government. And I believe it's only really a campaign of political disobedience and protest that will force the government to relinquish spending on these items. It has to become too painful politically to continue down this road before the government will give it up.
Obviously, people would be, you know, when they find out, people are very, very angry. I mean, we're talking around 1.7 billion for Libya. We're talking 4 to 4.5 billion a year on the occupation of Afghanistan and rising. We're talking about 70, 80, 90 billion pounds, depending on how you calculate it, on Trident. If you add all that together, you're talking about enough money to get rid of at least a third of the deficit that we're being told is the cause of austerity in the first place. So yeah, I think these figures are explosive figures. But I think people are angry anyway. I mean, the fact is, I think people are aware that wars cost a lot of money. And, you know, you look at all the opinion polls, they show that the majority of people want these wars to end and they don't want other wars to start. So, I mean, public opinion is actually on the side of the peacemakers. Public opinion is against the warmongers. And that's one of the things that is so outrageous about the situation at the moment. Both in terms of the austerity measures and in terms of the wars they're fighting, the politicians in their Westminster bubble are way out of touch with the popular mood and popular opinion. And that's, again, one of the things that we have to overcome. We have to overcome this democratic deficit that is really plaguing this country badly now.
What about Bahrain and other places? Are we interfering there? Are we going there and supporting those people who are under, you know, military regimes and it's awful human rights? Look at our own human rights. We don't have a very good record of human rights with all the sort of flights of rendition and people like Shaka Armour still sitting around. You know, where's Obama and Cameron in terms of stopping all this disgraceful stuff around the war? It's about time we pulled out of all these places and got our own house in order before we started interfering around the world and bring our money back in-house as well. You know, because if we were to actually save the billions of pounds that's being spent at the moment on the wars around the world, and I think something like 40 billion quid or more, I'm not sure the exact figure right now, on Libya, on the interference in Libya, the Libyan people should have been left to deal with things themselves.
Weapons are always the last thing that go for a government. And war isn't... The logic, of course, is absolutely correct that in a period of austerity, you would think that the first thing that we could dispense with is foreign wars. But viewed from the point of view of the government and the big corporations, actually, that's precisely the point when you need to use your military might to sustain your economic position. We all know what's going on in Libya. The government is intervening militarily, and as soon as the military before the military operation is even complete, British Petroleum and Anglo-Dutch Shell and other oil companies are busy renegotiating their contracts with Libyan oil so that their profits rise. So as far as the government is concerned, the war is a way of helping boost profits and get more money into the coffers in a sort of global strategic sense. Now, of course, to any ordinary citizen in this country, this is absolutely mad.
This government has come in and done the opposite. It's now said all the debts are going to be paid off in 3 years and that they will not continue the rising of benefits at the rate even of the retail price index, but only of the consumer price index, and that they will cut money on education, health and local authorities who provide an awful lot of the primary services that many of the poorest people rely on. The cuts are hitting disproportionately at the poorest, disproportionately at the most vulnerable, and making millionaires out of those people that pay very little in tax or go through a process of tax avoidance. What we're seeing is a growing gap between the richest and the poorest within our society. What we're seeing is growing poverty amongst the children in this country. It is unnecessary and it is wrong. The way out of a recession is to invest in the future. Invest in new houses, invest in new railways, invest in new infrastructure, invest in jobs for the future. We're already at between 8 and 10% national unemployment in this country. We're at 23% underemployment or not economically active in this country, and we have more than 20% of our young people without work, and it's going to get worse. This is not the way out. The way out is to invest in the future, not destroy the life chances of this generation.
Yeah, we're going in the jungle. Dan, Dan, Dan. Dan, we're going in the jungle, yeah!